Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week our guest is Pam Karlan, former law clerk to the Supreme Court Justice, High Justice Department official, and now professor of law at Stanford University Law School. Now remember, we love taking your questions, so write into politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. And please check out the links to our sponsors, 3-Day Blinds and The Washington Post, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It helps make this podcast happen. Please tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. What a week, James Carville. A young, deranged loner tried to assassinate Donald Trump. Within a couple of days, he was playing it for all it's worth, coming early to the Republican convention with a big patch on his ear. An impressive recovery. He then picks Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. And the first couple of days of the Republican convention, other than the highlight of Trump walking into the hall with that bandaged ear and a speech from the Teamsters, it was really pretty ordinary. They tried to make it different, a different party. It didn't really, I think, come across that much. I don't think J.D. Vance helps him politically. He appeals mainly to his base that's 100% there anyway. Resume is impressive from struggling white working class community, which he wrote about in a best-selling book, Yale Law School, Marine veteran, successful investor. But he's also a loose cannon who says some awful stupid things. Going back to 8 years ago, he called Trump America's Hitler. And after he traveled that road to Damascus, that led him to say that Democrats are led by childless cat ladies. Was he talking about Nancy Pelosi, who not only has five kids, but unlike JD's new idol, Trump, is married to the same person? Now, we'll see Thursday night if Trump, after the shooting, has changed his stripes. Color is a unifier. Color me skeptical. But James, the biggest gift to those Milwaukee Republicans is Joe Biden, who doubled down again on saying he's not going to get out. I have a friend who's a Biden supporter, very critical of me. She's out in Michigan. She said, "Why don't you talk to voters?" The AP has a poll this week. Two-thirds of Democrats want Joe Biden to get out of the race. If he stays in, it's a mistake of epic proportions. He's going to take down Democrats in the Senate, I'm afraid, and in the House, turn the entire government over to Donald Trump. And that's going to be his prime legacy, as it's going to be for his top aides, like people we know and like Mike Donlan, Ron Klain, Steve Ricchetti, Anita Dunn. They somehow have got to try to help persuade Joe Biden to get out, because it's a huge mistake for him to stay in.
Well, I guess I'll start with Vance, and I'm not sure that he doesn't help a little bit. And for one reason, he's 39 years old. Right? You're right. He's full of shit. He's adaptable. Maybe the most adaptable in a party of adaptability. Let's put it that way. He stands out as being more adaptable than most. But I don't know if it helps or hurts in terms of the Democrats. People don't understand. All of this is going to be written about, dissected, second-guessed, and of course, all of the internal things that the White House staff, you're always going to have that, and Anita and Bob Bauer, they're leaking on it, and what's Hunter doing right now, or, what polling they show him. It's also going to be on all the other Democrats. We got to go along with this. We got to get behind. Joe's got a good record. He's a great guy. And he got no challenge. In a time of crisis, maybe before this is over, we'll look back on this summer and say this is one of the most critical times in U.S. history. I think the thing we can say about most of the Democratic Party is they were cowards. I mean, say that, been a member of the party all of my life, but the level of cowardice and, there's nothing I can do about it. We just got to it's just stunning. We did have a choice. Maybe we still do. I don't know. I think the heat on President Biden this weekend is going to be the most since all of this stuff started. I think when the Republican convention is over, there's going to be a 72-hour window of sheer frightening panic in the Democrats. What it leads to, I'm not going to tell you, but I got to tell you, history is not going to judge the Democratic Party of 2024 very kindly.
Unless it changes, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I watched, the Lester Holt interview he gave this week was really, really terrible. They say get him out. When they get him out, it's a problem. I watched his Vegas speech to the NAACP because I was channel dialing, whatever one does, and MSNBC ran it. And by all accounts, I watched it. It was a good speech. He used a teleprompter. He had an enthusiastic crowd. Showed energy, only a few miscues. And then I got a call from a friend, a Democratic friend, who watched it. His only reaction was, God, he looks old. He can't escape that. And they're now going to, the new issue they're going to stress is the Supreme Court. Couldn't agree more. Term limits, ethics, that partisan court has lost the confidence of the people. Joe Biden cannot make that case. That's the problem. It's not the case. And I agree it's going to come to a, it's really going to come to some kind of a head after the Republican convention. I hope Nancy Pelosi, who I just am led to believe this, Hakeem Jeffries and Schumer will put it to him forcefully. We're going to lose and lose big if you don't step aside.
So to somebody who's been around campaigns as long as I have, yesterday there's a predictability, okay? First, it's the staff, and it's the media, and it's the elites, and then you have all the people saying, well, Lester Holt could have done a better job. I don't know. I like Lester Holt fine. It's not a problem. It's not fucking Lester Holt. Holt, okay? So what yesterday was, understand, when you get to the point, he says, just let him be Joe. Go long, Joe. Be for rent control. Be for constitutional amendments. Be for anything. You know, give me a laundry list of stuff that sounds good that will never, ever, ever get done in the next half century, all right? That was one of the most desperate days I've seen in modern politics, where you just went out and went long on every issue. So you go to NAACP, you say you fight rent control. How are you gonna do rent control? I mean, forget that you're never gonna get it through the Congress. Forget that I don't think you'd ever get it through the courts, even if you had a same courts in which you're not dealing with at all and was going to talk to Pam about. And think of all the policy proposals he threw out there yesterday. Again, this is one of the most desperate days. And, oh, it sounds great. I'm for that. Shit, everybody's for that. But, you know, I'm for sunny skies and 70-degree temperature every day. But much chance that's going to happen is the stuff that he proposed. This was a horrific day of a campaign and a candidate that literally just be yourself.
Yeah, no, he is desperate. Going back to the Republicans, the biggest card they're playing out there, other than Trump, is the God card. That somehow God has anointed Donald Trump with the shooting on last Saturday and the near escape. It clearly shows that God wants Donald Trump. I mean, I heard that from five or six people giving speeches there, and I heard it from some interviews. I'm not there. First convention I've missed in 50 years, and I have no regrets. But I don't pretend that I have an Episcopalian line to the Almighty, James. Maybe you do, but I'll tell you one thing. He or she's got too damn much on their platter to get involved in American presidential election to help a thrice married candidate who has been accused of sexual misconduct. But you have the number. How many women?
I think 26 have credibly come forward.
Yeah.
But we should never say.
And you know, let me say one final thing. You know, as for the change, Trump, Look at the Bobby Kennedy transcript that came out with their phone call. I mean, if he didn't look like the same old Trump and sound like the same old Trump and talk like the same old Trump, he was spewing nonsense about COVID. Anyway, go ahead.
So I've talked on this show many times, and I thought that Trump was viewed by his supporters as a theological figure, not a secular figure. And of course, him being within an inch of having his head blown off is to them further proof that they were right, that God is protecting him, he sent him, he's a mess. Do I think it's all horseshit? Of course I think it's all horseshit. Do I think it's a perversion of everything that you can think of? Yes, of course it's a perversion of everything you can think of. But to them, this is just further proof that he was sent here by God. The fact that he was prosecuted, if he was found guilty, they always do that. They always persecute the righteous. Right. Don't you understand that, Jason?
Jesus.
But Jesus don't drive.
Right.
And what we don't sufficiently understand is how central theology is to most of his supporters. And even if you're secular, you know all the biblical stories. And that's the only narrative that exists. And this, to them, this fits right into the biblical narrative. In their theological view of the world, he was persecuted. They killed him. He rose again. And the final act, I hate to tell y'all, but he vanquishes all of his opponents. And all of you people who believe in pluralism and tolerance and helping being about people are trying to make it and all the things that we believe in, we are the people to be vanquished in the name of God. And you have to, the gays, the non-whites, they're all going to be, Trump is going to be triumphant over all of them. And that's just where we are in this little theological play that we're in the middle of.
Hey, James, as well as the Republican convention, Donald Trump seems to own the courts, at least some of them. The Supreme Court said he's above the law as president, and his last judicial appointment, Judge Eileen Cannon, a MAGA judge, overturned a half a century of court rulings and threw out the classified documents indictment of Trump on the questionable grounds that the special prosecutor, Jack Smith, was unconstitutionally appointed. Now, you know, just a quick reminder, Trump not only illicitly took classified documents when he left the White House. He refused to return them, he hid them, and he lied to investigators. It was his former Attorney General, William Barr, acknowledged a pretty clear-cut case. There is no one better to discuss this than Pam Karlan, a former Supreme Court clerk, top Justice Department official, distinguished Stanford Law School professor, and expert on constitutional law, and her most important credential, a partner in our Sunday Zoom call. Pam, you read this surprising action by Judge Cannon. Is there any basis for it?
So what she has essentially done is picked at little tiny pieces of a very clear fabric and then said, look, here's a pile of thread. There's no real basis for her decision here other than her desire to get rid of this case.
Yeah, she wrote that, I mean, I didn't read the whole decision. I know you did. But she wrote that even if Jack Smith, the special prosecutor, was what they call an inferior officer subject to the attorney general, that didn't matter. She just wanted to throw this case out. She's been slow walking it all along and seemed to want to protect Trump at every step.
Yeah, it's really kind of extraordinary how far she's gone to do this, you know. And the thing that's frustrating about her opinion is it looks like a judicial opinion, but it completely misses the forest because she's looking at tiny acorns along the way.
Pam, what's next from Justice? Jack Smith appeals the case. She's been decisively overturned by a conservative court, appellate court before. The attorney general takes it over a different venue. What are their best options right now?
So there are basically three options. One option is, and I think this is the one they've already begun, is Jack Smith appeals the dismissal of the indictment, which he can do. It goes to the 11th Circuit. He can, of course, move to expedite that appeal, to ask to have it decided more quickly than usual, because in the usual course of events, it would be several months before the briefing is completed, and then a couple more months before oral argument gets scheduled, and then some amount of time after that before an opinion gets written. And of course, that would take us through to the election. The government could just throw up its hands and give up. But as you say, this is a slam dunk case on the merits. That is, it's a slam dunk case that Donald Trump violated federal law here. The third option, which is a kind of oddly nuclear option, is for Attorney General Garland to call Judge Cannon's bluff to decide, okay, you think that this has to be prosecuted by the Department of Justice, fine. And he orders the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida to refile the indictment as the U.S. Attorney.
Yeah, and I guess one other possible option is to move to replace her on the grounds of gross incompetence.
Well, right now, what you have is a case that's been dismissed. I mean, as part of doing any of these other things, he could also move to have her recused or disqualified from the case. But right now, there isn't a case pending.
And if they do that in the context of what else they do, that would be very unusual, wouldn't it? I mean, you rarely do that.
Yeah, there are not a lot of times where a U.S. Attorney's Office or a Justice Department officials have moved to disqualify a federal judge, in part because of the sort of old Machiavellian line, you know, if you're going to, who will attack the king must kill him. And if you're not going to succeed, all you've done is riled up the judge. But at this point, she's issued enough rulings that are questionable in the case that really for the appearance of impartiality, another judge should be sitting on the case.
James?
So, Professor, this guy, Ellie Hornick, H-O-N-I-G, is a kind of ubiquitous commentator on cable TV, and I think he writes for some major publication, who strikes me as a kind of Alan Dershowitz, Jonathan Turley wannabe. Says all of you people are reading this all wrong. It was actually a well-reasoned decision, and he went to the inferior officers and who appoints him and says, you got to understand that previously they were authorized by act of Congress that gave the Attorney General the right. That, and she's right that the appointment of Jack Smith does not follow the prescribed constitutional passing the baton to an inferior officer. Why are all of you people in high-end law, constitutional law, getting this wrong? And actually, there's some brilliance on earth here by the decision of Judge Eileen Cannon?
No, I think what she's really done is she's strung together a bunch of propositions, each one of which might not be debatable in itself, to create a result that makes no sense at all. I mean, just to go back to something Al said when he was introducing me, which is he said I was, you know, at one point a high Justice Department official. I was an officer. There was no statute that creates the position I'm in, but the Attorney General has the right to hire people into these positions. And that's been understood for generations, for, you know, leave aside the special counsel nature of this. And really what she's sort of trying to say is, even though the language of a variety of statutes literally empowers the Attorney General to hire people, to retain people, and to appoint people to do the kinds of things that Jack Smith was doing, because they didn't use some magic words, somehow this appointment of all of these appointments is invalid. And then she does things like she says, well, you know, the Supreme Court didn't fully address this question in United States against Nixon. But the reason they didn't fully address it is because everybody understood it was within the power of the Attorney General, even Richard Nixon.
So I guess what kind of scares me is they don't care. So if you look at the Dobbs decision, it's 50 years, you know, Of course, they go testify on their confirmation hearing and never thought about abortion. Okay, fine, I believe that. And then you had the sort of Chevron doctrine, which to somebody like me seems perfectly sensible, that in implementing the regulations that you got to defer to some expertise. And this whole thing is about just dismantling all federal power. And that's always been the dream of carpenters and big business, because the federal government is the only thing that could regulate railroads, could regulate utilities, could regulate banks, or anything else. And what scares me is this is just another crippling in the power of federal law enforcement. And you know, all you need is five Supreme Court justices to say that Judge Cannon is a true legal visionary. And these bastards would do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what she's done is she's created this bizarre heads you lose, tails you lose also kind of world. Because what she's really saying here is, you know, the Attorney General can't decide that in order to make people confident that there is a nonpartisan, impartial decision by the government to prosecute the former president, he can't do that. But I can guarantee you that if he had simply indicted her straightforwardly by having the U.S. attorney do it, she would then be entertaining a claim that this was a selective, invalid, vindictive prosecution and was unconstitutional that way. So what she's really doing, in a sense, is making it impossible, as you say, making it impossible for the federal government to prosecute Donald Trump.
I think that's
because you can't have independent counsel, or you do it yourself, in which case it's biased.
Right. I think the idea is we don't want him prosecuted, so we'll just make some shit up. And the problem is, I think five people in the Supreme Court might agree with that. But Albert, to you.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that the timing of her release, she had obviously written the decision for days or weeks ahead of time, the opening day of the Republican convention 2 days after Trump was shot, it certainly was convenient, if nothing else, Pam, the timing.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, courts have in the past timed their opinions to avoid the appearance of, you know, having an opinion timed for political purposes. And, you know, she should have waited.
But she wanted to do it for political purposes, so it was hard to wait. That's my editorial opinion. But, you know, picking up with James, what Trump apologists and most of the Republican Party now say is he can't be impeached. That's up to the courts. The courts now say he has immunity as president, so he can't be, you know, tried there. There can't be a special prosecutor. That makes a mockery of the rule of law when it comes to Donald Trump as president.
Yeah, I mean, there's one set of laws for everybody else, and there's a different set of laws for Donald Trump.
Yeah. Trump is running out the clock very successfully on these prosecutions, helped by, you know, very partisan courts. Supreme Court, Judge Cannon. But did the Justice Department wait too long to bring these cases?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. I mean, you know, this case, they did not wait too long to bring this case, in a sense. I think probably the January 6th case they did. But with this case, you know, they went in, they found the documents fairly quickly after the National Archives told them what was going on. They brought the indictment fairly quickly. I mean, this case should have been over months ago.
As was, they also named a special counsel, special prosecutor for Joe Biden in classified documents. And I didn't hear any conservative clamor to dismiss Mr. Herr because of he was inappropriately named.
No, and they didn't have any problem with naming a special prosecutor to prosecute Hunter Biden,
right?
Either.
No, exactly. I have a terrible prediction, and then I'll turn it back to James. And that is, if Trump and Republicans take over the next 4 years, look for Eileen Cannon to be the Brett Kavanaugh of 2027, Justice Cannon. They pay off the people who favor them. James? Tell me I'm too cynical.
I think we have the problem is I think a whole generation of law professors, journalists, Supreme Court observers, you get a lot of judges were taught that once you get a different set, different law, how it applies, and what you do is you go back and you look at previous decisions, you do statutory construction, and you, to the best of your ability, you try to resolve the legal dispute before you. And so they'll say, well, some people have a more conservative interpretation or read a statute differently or read it more strictly than other people. I think what we got to get over, they don't give a shit. They say, I want to arrive at this conclusion, therefore I'm just going to say what I want. And I think that's hard when you've been thinking a certain way your entire life to say that whole thought process is becoming not applicable to the federal judiciary. I think that's how much trouble we're in.
Showing how judicious Pam Karlan is, she's just absorbing your comment, James.
I understand James's comment completely that, you know, the vast majority of judges, I think, are still trying to get it right. But one of the problems we now have is there is a worldview out there now that is completely cabined off in a way that leads them to, you know, to view the courts the way James does. I mean, one of the things that was most interesting is one very conservative law professor who used to be an originalist then came out and said, well, now that we've got the courts, we don't have to be originalists anymore. We can go for what we think the policy, you know, the proper policy outcomes are. And that's really worrisome. I mean, one thing, Al, that I think would be very interesting is I have a slightly different prediction, which is I think that, you know, one of the things the Republicans have shown is not a lot of gratitude to the people who helped them. I don't think Eileen Cannon is going to be the next Brett Kavanaugh. And I think in part that's going to be because if you could put her under oath, which she would have to be for another confirmation hearing, I don't think things would be very pretty.
Good point, Pam.
I think she'll lie just like all the rest of them lie under
oath.
Well,
Brett Kavanaugh lied under oath, I think.
They're lying about stuff where you can't sit down and go line by line with them through, okay, this is what you said, but, you know, isn't it true that this is what, in fact, the Supreme Court said? The Supreme Court didn't say what you said it was. This wasn't dicta. This was essential to their holding.
I can't thank you enough. And, you know, these guys, by the way, the Federalist Society, they have all these judicial conferences. They pay their way out there. All these right-wing judges go. They tell them how to write the decision. This all happens time and time again. And they are, you know, we're looking for a precedent. We're looking for statutory interpretation. We're looking for legislative intent. And they're just like, shit, this is the result we want. And we're just going to come to this result. And I hate to say that. I think it's a perversion of everything. But I think we got to recognize where we are right now. And this is not Justice Harlan having a more conservative interpretation of statute and Justice Brandeis or something. Okay, that world, goodbye. That's gone. That's in the history books. We're now, I want this to happen, ergo it's going to happen. I hate to say it, Professor, but that's what I think.
Well, this opinion certainly gives you ammunition for that point of view. I mean, you know, she stretched every last bit of law she could, as far as it could go, and then some, to come up with this idea that somehow the problem here is that the Justice Department is undermining Congress's role by having an impartial, special prosecutor rather than having the attorney general in there. Because I guarantee you, if the attorney general hadn't appointed a special prosecutor and had brought this prosecution, she would be trying to find that there was selective prosecution here. Even though the government prosecutes people for this kind of retention of, you know, retention of classified documents all the time.
Pam Karlan, there's no one we'd rather talk to about this because you are the best. And
just makes me sorry I have to talk to you about this.
Well, I love talking to you even when we're sorry. So anyway, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Sadly, we're going to probably have to revisit this whole case of judges and judiciary in the future. But if not sooner, we'll talk to you Sunday. Hey, now for the outrage of the week. You know, there's a double standard in media coverage, and it's not what the right-wingers claim. Trump and the MAGA crowd play the mainstream media sometimes very shrewdly. Let me give you a specific example. After Trump was shot last weekend, a chorus of right-wingers said it was due to Biden's inflammatory language. J.D. Vance, in auditioning for vice president, said that, as did media apologists like law professor Jonathan Turley, who has been able to shed his fake neutrality to become a Trump cheerleader. They said Democrats have been citing this stuff for a long time. That's largely bunk, as this was a sick loner, as is most of the case in these kind of attacks. There's very little evidence in most of them, at least, that politics is what motivates these killers. But outside of that, here's a question for the Vances and the Turleys. When Donald Trump for years insisted that President Obama wasn't really an American, the birther, that he was therefore illegally in office, or that the Biden families was a crime syndicate, or when he called for executing Mark Milley, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and recently said he wants to try Liz Cheney for treason, are they inflammatory? Is that inflammatory language that incites violence? I haven't heard from you on that, Senator Vance or Mr. Turley. If there is any modern American politician who is engaged in vicious and conceivably dangerous rhetoric, it's Donald J. Trump. That's not going to change, James. That's who he is.
No. So, some years ago, I don't know, maybe 15, 10 years ago, on a plane from Atlanta to New Orleans, which I am frequently, a nice-looking middle-aged guy comes up to me and says, James, I'm Edwin Moses. Well, to me, it could have been fucking Moses himself that came up to me. That's how big a deal Edwin Moses is, Mo. If some of you, Al knows, but some of you don't, he was probably the best athlete at doing a thing in the history of the world. He was a 400-meter hurdler. And there's an article in Sports Illustrated, and he is a very accomplished engineer. And he figured out how close you run to the line. He changed the way the sport worked as to how many steps you took, how you cleared it. It was all based on math and physics and engineering. He became an engineer, I don't know, General Dynamics or some defense contractor after he had won. He won two gold medals. The only reason he won three is because we didn't compete in 1980. He didn't lose a race for something like 10 years. Please read the article in Sports Illustrated. Just when you think there was no Sports Illustrated, there's definitely a Sports Illustrated. We have got to track this guy down to talk to him about the Olympics. And his current crusade is something we can all identify with. He is big on it. He's using his background, his scientific background, to fight doping in sports.
That's a great guess, James, for Olympic week.
I'm trying to find out. That's what I'm saying. We've got to track this guy down now. Let's get Edwin Moses, because to me, Edwin Moses is Moses.
That's a great idea, and let's put our producer to work. He can do it, I hope.
Absolutely.
All right.
Find him, track him down, hunt him. I think he's in Paris, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, and now for our listener questions, you know, which we always love, and many of them this week are topics we've already covered, whether it's Trump and Biden or J.D. Vance, so I'm going to skip most of those, but we still have some great ones. The first one is from Tony in Larkspur, California. He says, if Democratic senators and congressmen are polling better than Biden in swing states, and they are, often by double digits. Isn't it likely, Tony asks, when push comes to shove, a voter in the voting booth will vote for Biden if they are voting for the other Democrats on the slate? James, wishful thinking?
Well, first of all, congratulations to Tony, because he's asked the question that I ask myself day in and day out. And the disparity between the Senate, and I mean, it's double digits in almost everywhere. And what scares me, and your question is well taken, it is a possibility, but the Republicans are twice as enthusiastic, at least probably a little bit more, about their candidate than Democrats are. And my great fear is that come Election Day, it's just going to be a heavier Republican turnout than Democratic turnout as a result of the lack of enthusiasm at the top of the ticket, and this translates down ballot. I hope you're right, but it would really is frustrating to me, and I just want to fucking scream it. The country wants to vote Democratic. It couldn't be clear. This is not an anti-incumbent year. Okay, let's get rid of that. I don't want to vote for Biden because he's too old, and the Democratic Party is too cowardly to just what the public wants, something different. Shit, give it to them.
Two-thirds of Democratic voters in that AP poll this week, James, want Biden out. That's the Democrats.
Yes.
That's incredible.
I'm just, you know, right now this show is going to air on Thursday. The pressure that's coming this weekend. Look, I'm sure that he can say I'm just digging in and I'm doing this. I still of the opinion that he may get out. Get the money. I hope. Maybe I'm just made a bad bet and I just keep betting a 16 into a face card. But when I talk to donors, I talk to people who wants to go to our convention. I mean, the convention is crazy. It's full of shit. And they lie every other word. But they're all there. When President Biden went to Michigan, the governor, both senators, the Senate candidate, none of them showed up. None of these Democratic senatorial candidates are going to show up in Chicago. It's going to be a wake. And somebody has to tell him, sir, you're not going to be a coronation. You're not going to have, you know, adoring people, the funders, the donors, and everything else. It's not going to be like that.
And you're,
for God's sake, somebody talk to him.
Absolutely destroying your legacy. Maybe he'll
totally.
You know. James,
you know, somebody sent me something. Curtis Wilkie said he needs to drop out.
James, Maya in Tokyo, Japan. I got to take this because I'd have to disqualify you from answering this. Maya from Tokyo asks, why isn't Mitch Landrieu's name floating around as a potential Biden alternative? Seems like a no-brainer to me. Maya, there would be no better choice. It just, you know, if it happened a year ago, I think it could have, you know, he could have been a great candidate. But I tell you this, if Biden does drop out, and my guess is they're going to, given the timing, even though I'm for James's process, they're going to probably end up with Kamala. My first choice might be Andy Beshear, but she ought to consider Mitch as her running mate.
We got to get from here to there. It's not going to happen. My dream thing is, you know, I know how much talent there is. I know how much desire there is to vote Democratic. And wow, we just failed people as a political party so far. And we failed at the exact wrong time. It's going to be tragic when we read the books about all this, because it's all going to get revealed and reported on. It's going to be terrible.
Sure is. James Shane in Minneapolis, Minnesota, says, if Trump wins, is democracy broken?
Yes.
Simple.
The Constitution is broken. Care, of course. And they already tell you. By the way, they're telling you that. They're not, look at, you know, I don't want to say it's credit, give them credit for anything, but they're telling you. And, you know, theological people don't, they make laws. They don't follow laws. What are you talking about? This is what what this is all about. This is God sent him here, and if he wants that, then we must give it to him. And that's going to be what's going to happen.
Yeah. You know, I hate some of these supposedly anti-Trump conservative Republicans who say, well, the Democrats caused all this because they brought these cases against him. He was a criminal. He committed criminal acts. I agree the New York case wasn't the strongest, but he still clearly committed a crime. And the Georgia prosecutor screwed up. But boy, the Mar-a-Lago case and the January 6th case, if you want to say you don't prosecute someone, that says, you know, that we do have a king in this country. George Washington was wrong. Whatever the political impact, it would have been absolutely unacceptable not to prosecute him in those cases.
Yes, it's the crimes in the United States, well, not anymore, but what the country I grew up in, no one was above the law. And now we don't live in the same country, and they're just getting warmed up. All right, they're just getting warmed up. And, you know, if we talk, they don't give a shit about the law. Don't kid yourself.
Yeah.
It's done.
James Joe in Dobbs Ferry, New York, says, based on history, do polls always underestimate the Trump vote? Joe, they have. They have in 16 and 20, not by much in 20, although I must say some of the final polls in 16 were much better than people remember. You know, our poll at Bloomberg with Ann Seltzer, the NBC poll. But some of the state polls in particular, he did better. If anything, he tends to outpoll his numbers. Not sure that's going to be the case this time, but, you know, I'd feel a lot more comfortable if Democrats were going to Election Day with a 4 or 5 point advantage.
You know, if the polls are good, you talk about the polls. If the polls are bad, you don't believe the polls. All right. You can't expect something, polling to deliver something that it's not. If it's going to be some, you know, statistical noise, and there's a margin error, there's all of these things. We're not doing well, okay? Just quit telling people we are, because we're not. And there's a whole Washington Post story, I think it was the Times, well reported. They don't show them to her, okay? When the history of all of this is written, if you think as a Democrat you're mad now, you haven't even begun to get mad. Okay? You haven't begun to get mad. And you're going to find more and more out. This is right there in print, well reported. Lisa Lear, Maggie Haberman. Okay, these are people that we know. These are people that don't make shit up. All right, and I know this from internally. You can't show him a poll, and they go in and tell him he's 4 up. And he's too old and too confused that he actually believes them. And that's where we are. Don't kid yourself. We're in a fantasy world.
James, our global viewers are coming through this week because Andrew in Paris, France.
Oh, wow. If you see Edwin Moses, tell me you weren't on the show.
Yeah, Andrew, and we'll let you come on with him if you can catch him for us. Anyway, he asked, don't Presidents Clinton and Obama risk permanently staining their legacies by staying silent and providing support for the Biden candidacy when we still have time to change nominees and avoid disaster?
I think that the overall cowardice in the party is really breathtaking. I exempt them because that's really not their role. And I don't think, and I understand where they're coming from. However, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't discreetly weigh in this weekend. I think we're that deep a crisis. I really do.
Well, I already saw the cheering, the now Biden cheering squad on, I guess that's your Morning Joe, is now blaming Obama for the George Clooney column. I mean, come on, give me a break, will you? I think if there's a group that has to go and try to really force him out, it's got to be Hakeem Jeffries, Chuck Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi. They're the ones who have so much at risk. Don't know that they will. I think Pelosi has come awfully close.
Again, my sense is it's going to be a brutal weekend.
Yeah.
Which way it turns out, I don't know.
John in Gurnee, Illinois. Where's Gurnee, Illinois? Your wife is a Illini. Do you know?
Like Gurnee, like Inc. Gurnee, Kyle?
G-U-R-N-E-E.
I don't know. If it was a Y, I'd say it's probably in Northern Illinois.
Well, let's find out. Anyway, John says Trump has announced that he'll go after anyone who opposes him. Do you think that the recent Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity now places Democrats in more danger? John, there's a simple answer. Yes. You better believe it. And they will go after people. And this court is going to go along with most of what he does. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I more emphatically can say yes. I guess I could say hell yes, but it's all yes.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yes, yes, yes.
James, our last question really plays to your expertise. Sam in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Should all of us donors change tack to a, quote, we need to put a check on Trump, end quote, and vote for down ticket and vote and contribute and fund now down ticket races? And how, which ones?
Yeah, it's a tough question, but a lot of donors are telling me I'm not funding this, and they're using that leverage as donors to tell Joaquin that if you want money from me, you got to do something about this. I don't know. I do know that the contributions to the Biden campaign are drying up. Trump's got so much money now, the financial advantage, the disadvantage that Democrats had, and we enjoyed a huge financial advantage, by the way, as late as April or May. We're getting slaughtered right now. And now you have Elon Musk saying, I'm going to give him $45 million a month. I cannot adequately express the crisis that the United States is in and the crisis that the Democratic Party is in. It's so much worse than you think. My words escape me, but we got a lot of praying, a lot of soul searching to do here in the coming week.
Yeah, James, I'm afraid you're absolutely right. It's a very, very difficult time, and if Joe Biden doesn't do the right time, it can't have a good ending, and it won't have a good ending. So, all right, listen, we love those letters and those emails and those questions. If we didn't get to yours this week, please send it in again, and we'll try to get to it next week.
Okay, and find Edwin Moses.
Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. Don't forget to send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this week's episode, we would really appreciate it if you would check out the links to our sponsors, 3-Day Blinds and The Washington Post, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them, because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content. A lot to add these days, so go take a look. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon for your favorite podcast sites. Now remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.
This fits right into the biblical narrative. And the final act is he vanquishes his enemies.
Oh, very good morning.
Hold on a second.
Gentlemen, this is Adam, your cruise director, speaking. And if you would like to hear this announcement in your suites, please turn your TV to the bridge camera, which is channel number 2.
He rose again.
Well, following our time change last night, the current time is 8:58 a.m.
So now
coming up this morning.
Fuck.